This is the Afternoon Brief on High FM with Michael McKenna. Focused reporting, sharp analysis, and the local stories shaping our lives. Daily updates in a fast-paced world.
When protest turns deadly, what does that mean now for South Africa? Well, public protest has long been one of South Africa's most powerful forms of expression. But what happens when activism itself becomes dangerous? The recent killing of a Gauteng leader from the March in March movement now has sent shockwaves through the country. The organization now is vowing to intensify its protests. This, of course, now raises questions not only about safety, but also about the state of civic activism, also public trust, and how citizens make their voices heard in today's South Africa. Joining us now to take a closer look at this development, we welcome once again Makone Maja. Makone is a strategic engagements manager at the Institute of Race Relations. Just some background, Makone is also a political analyst and public commentator who has written extensively about governance, also civic participation and the relationship between citizens and the state. Makone, good afternoon to you. Thank you for joining us once again on the Afternoon Brief.
Michael, it's always a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Great to have you on board. Well, the death of a protest leader, understandably, it's shifted now attention beyond the protest itself. So what does this incident now tell us about the current climate for civic activism in South Africa?
Indeed, this is also not just an ordinary protester. Articles are describing him as one of the leaders of the March in March movement. This is Mr. Andile Somgata. I may be saying that incorrectly. So this is the death of a prominent figure within these illegal, anti-illegal immigration marches, which has then resulted in the deaths of one of their own. And it is rather unfortunate, but I think it is indicative of some of those underlying issues that we have been discussing in the broader conversation about immigrants and the loss of control of enforcing rules at the border, is that the state has not only lost control of the narrative about illegal immigration, but even the failure to enforce rules. You're seeing this monopoly of violence, which is supposed to be vested in a government, at least in a well-functioning democratic society. The monopoly on the control of violence is supposed to be within the ambit of a police force, within the bounds and the realms of the police force. And even that, from the March in March movement itself, all the way up to the people that are now acting in defense or against the March in March movement, which, as we're seeing, has resulted in the death of what their Gauteng leader. I think these are events that are symptomatic of that broader issue that we have been discussing. And Michael, I think you also recall that shortly after the deadline of the 30th of June, we were sort of preempting where to from now for March in March. At the time, the main face of the movement, Ms. Jacinta Ngobese, had been promising that they would continue marching. And we're seeing those commitments come through again now after the death of one of the leaders. But it seems that we were celebrating too early when we were congratulating the police for demonstrating and being able to control the crowds on the day of the 30th of June, and that although there were subsequent damages to property, to businesses, and a few events of looting here and there that were reported by the police, overall, it was still a much more significant improvement from the July riots, which the March in March movement and the 30th of June protests had been are predicted to sort of take form and take shape. And yet we're seeing that as these marches continue, that control that the police demonstrated on the 30th of June is dithering away.
You know, we look at this country's, if I can phrase it this way, its proud history of protests, a distinctive history of protest as a tool for change. But now, let's look at what we've been witnessing in recent years. We've also seen demonstrations becoming increasingly confrontational. So has the nature of public protest changed, and if so, why?
I think so. I think as people lose trust in the government, as can be seen in the Edelman's trust, you're constantly seeing that more and less, fewer and fewer people trust the government, trust the police. Then there's more desperation on their end to actually fill in the role of the police and of law enforcement officials. And I think with March and March, they've also demonstrated that they do more than just protest, right? They actually want to do document checks and, you know, forcefully remove store owners, illegal immigrant store owners. This is according to them. Whether they're illegal or not is a different issue, because it's also been reported that in events where shopkeepers, plaza shopkeepers who have documents, they're still encouraged and they demand that they too leave the premises. And so you're seeing that this has become more than just a protest. They have taken on other roles of administration, the government as an administrative entity, to check whether people really are here legally, and all of that is lawlessness. But you're seeing these protests grow to become more and evolve beyond just the scope of protesting and into various roles that would be taken up by the police. I mean, some of them are even facilitating citizens' arrests. Can't say whether that's legitimate or not, but the more desperate people are, and I think the more trust lost in the government, the more we're seeing them try and act more and more as government should.
Makone, it's interesting you raised, or rather outlined, what you've just been talking about, because there's a story that caught my attention earlier on regarding Limpopo Premier Dr. Ramatuba warning that efforts to address illegal immigration must not result in South Africans also being profiled because of their appearance, language, or ethnicity. I wanted to bring this up with our listeners a little later on in the show, but it ties in exactly with what you're saying. My question to you is, are we seeing a concerning escalation of interpretation regarding illegal immigrants and what they stand for and what they could represent? You mentioned now that despite the fact that some immigrants were legally there, they did have the papers, they still were required to go. Are we seeing now a further interpretation a concerning interpretation of illegal immigrants and, you know, escalating into bias and racism and tribalism and, you know, like misinterpreting other racial groups, for that matter, as illegal immigrants? Are we seeing an escalation here?
Absolutely, Michael. And as you recap South Africa's history, you also remind us of South Africa's tradition of protest. You also remind us of how frivolous the apartheid government was in also doing its own like checks and Dompas pass checks and assessing racial categorization and ensuring that you know, you've assigned yourself the category that they would assign you with things like the pencil tests, right?
There we go.
And so we're seeing South Africans now take up that space too, where they're facilitating these frivolous test to evaluate whether people are South African or not, and even in some instances discarding the fact that they are immigrants who are here legally. And so I absolutely agree with you that, you know, these particularly in Limpopo, where we're bordered by a few countries, and that there's a lot of shared language and identity between us and those countries. And so there will be ambiguity in terms of actually knowing who's from where.
Right.
And that threat has also extended to South Africans themselves. Well, it should have never, illegal immigrants should have never been under threat to begin with. Not of vigilantism. Yes, of law and order, but not be fearing, you know, that they'll have their spaza shops forcefully closed and burnt down and their stock looted. But I absolutely agree with you that we're seeing South Africans operate in a way and in a manner similar to the apartheid government, which, you know, a move into democracy was an indictment on those sort of conduct, to say this is not who we are and this is not what we want to resemble. And it's also rubbishing, you know, protests like the Sharpeville massacre, which were essentially people protesting against things like the pass checks and, you know, racial categorization. South Africans themselves are now spoiling the efforts of those people that protested and died then in how they're conducting themselves.
Let's look at Let's go beyond the headlines now. I wish we just had more time to analyze and continue from where we just left off. But now, it's easy to focus on individual incidents. But now, what bigger governance lessons should now policymakers be taking from what we're seeing, this growing number of community-led protests across the country?
I think our government has been reactionary for a long time, and this is beyond the issue of border control. You know, mm-hmm. even in terms of the infrastructure failures that South Africa has been experiencing over the last years, owing to failures to perform regular maintenance, it just shows a state whose capacity is diminishing in every facet. And in this instance, particularly when it comes to immigration and border control, and that the result of that has been that populist leaders will mm-hmm. come and validate the experiences of South Africans. And then it becomes a narrative that the government can no longer control. They lose sight of that, and people start to take the law into their own hands, desperate to defend themselves, desperate to defend their livelihoods, desperate to act on the commands and under the leadership of these populist actors who most of the time are politically exploitative. And I think the lessons here are for the government: if it wants to gain back the trust of South Africans, it has to be proactive. It has to be, and we're hearing from the Minister of Home Affairs that the sort of mechanisms that are being put in place now are to ensure that sustainably people cannot return back into this country unless they have documents, and that those that have already traversed the laws of this country, it will make sure that they're not welcome back. And so we need sustainable implementation of laws and systems sure. that will ensure that from the border to the interior, South Africans are kept safe. And again, that's a lesson that you can apply across the public sector. It's not just one for, you know, entities responsible for border management and control, but all the way up to local government, as you're speaking about. Even the Premier, Papi Ramatuba, has brought it to our attention, the dangers that South Africans face. And it can all be traced back to a loss in trust in government, and a loss in trust that's also justified. So I think this is a lesson for the government to be proactive mm-hmm. rather than reactive in a bid to gain back the trust of South Africans and ensure that law and order is maintained.
Mkhono, before we wrap up, I just want to share a message with you from Linda. Linda says, "Greetings, Michael, and the Afternoon Brief, and to our beautiful and oh-so-smart Mkhono. I'm not getting any work done sitting and listening intently." Thank you so much, Linda, for your contribution to the show, and looking forward to everybody coming on board. Mkhono, before we let you go, as we look to the months ahead, do you expect then civic activism to become more organized and influential in the country? And what should both government and citizens then keep in mind as we wrap up?
Let me thank Linda for the kind words. They are very much appreciated. I don't know if you've seen this, Michael. There was an article that was done on the mobilization and leading up to the events on the 30th of June, to the protests on the 30th of June. Mm-hmm. And this article was basically scraping data on the internet, scraping data on social media platforms to try and establish whether these engagements, these protests, the use of the hashtags were coordinated or whether they were organic. And ultimately, they found that they were coordinated. So there are larger shadowy figures behind the scenes that are actually operating, political operatives, bringing these movements together. And they are incredibly, incredibly influential, particularly as we are in an election year. We're less than half the year away from the election on the 4th of November.
Right.
And so we should look at these movements a little more suspiciously in evaluating whether these are organic grievances that South Africans have, and I'm sure there's a good number of you know, the engagements online that are generated organically, but you should not dismiss that there could also be chat bots or bot farms, or, you know, people who have political motivations in moving certain narratives across in South Africa who could be behind and funding these movements. And these movements are not disclosing it to South Africans. So this is an article, I think you can find it on News 24, that describes this hypothesis okay. of whether or not these engagements online are taking place organically or if they could possibly be coordinated. They do not ascribe them to any foreign government or anything, but they are saying that just the sheer number of like the surges in these messages and in these conversations and in the generation of these tweets, this study was largely done on X. It demonstrates that that wasn't an organic engagement and that these discussions were being funded and coordinated at a larger scale.
Makone, we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us today, reminding us that protest is more than a headline. It's often a reflection, as we have discussed, of how people experience governance in their daily lives. Communities feel unheard, and they look for other ways to make their voices count. And the challenge for our country is ensuring that those voices can be heard safely, also constructively, and within a democracy which protects both freedom of expression and the rule of law. Our guest today was Makone Maja, Strategic Engagements Manager at the Institute of Race Relations. It was a pleasure chatting to you once again on the Afternoon Brief.